speaking today with Councilmember Oliver Pennington, who is in his first term as the council member in District G. Councilman, thank you for talking to me. This is your first term. Has it been what you thought it would be when you ran for office?
Yes, it has. It has been. I knew that there would be a substantial opportunity for constituent services from talking to other council members, my predecessor, Pam Holman, and others. And certainly we've had that, and we've had some success at that. Yeah, in addition to that, unfortunately, we've had a terrific budget problem, as you well know, that we have dealt with. As well as pension problems, and you know, my view about a public office is that you can kind of make as much out of it or a little out of it as you want, and so I've found some other things to work on, like economic development that I've spent some time on, and frankly, I'm trying to get my arms around to see how I can be productively work on that. As well as some other things. So yeah, I've stayed busy, and I feel like I've had some good work product.
You are the chair of the Flooding and Drainage Committee on Council, and I presume that has a lot to do with Rebuild Houston these days, and I'll get to that in a minute. But is there anything that that committee is doing that does not have to do about with Rebuild Houston that we ought to know about?
Well, as the chair, I'm also an ex officio member of the Citizens Oversight Board for Rebuild Houston, which is, you know, charged with making recommendations for the policies for the expenditure of the funds and also for a long-range plan. And I've spent, you know, a fair amount of time on that. But we've had two drainage committee meetings, and we got stood up by the FEMA because we wanted to hear about federal reimbursement, you know, for flood losses. We're going to have that report at the next meeting. Well, there's a lot going on in flooding. One of the big issues that I discovered, you know, during the campaign was the flood that occurred at Gessner and I-10, where 500 homes were flooded. And I worked actually with TERS and tried to keep the city and I think kept the city innervated so that there is a hydrological study that's been performed at the expense primarily of the TERS to show what service is necessary to that area. There haven't been many, you know, flooding problems in the last few months, obviously, with no rain, but they're ongoing issues.
All right. Well, let's talk Rebuild Houston then. Just at a high level, what's your overview of how it's been going so far?
Well, the first thing that I was concerned about at the time the city council was considering ordinance was that we had a credible program. One that the people felt like they got a fair shake in. And so I proposed a couple of amendments. So one was to allow an appeal from a preliminary determination of a liability for the payment of impermeable cover. So I put that amendment out. The mayor agreed to it, and we put it in there. And now there's a second amendment that allows an appeal to a three-person hearings examiner panel if the person is not satisfied with the result that he or she may get from the first two levels. So I think we have a program that everybody you know, should feel that they're getting a fair hearing on. And so that was my first effort. And then, you know, my second effort is really on the advisory committee, the overview committee, to try to envision not just the replacement of existing facilities because they may or may not be adequate, but to envision, you know, what we really need to resolve, you know, the major flooding problems in the city. Some of those, you know, it's not just a drainage pool of money, it's for streets as well as drainage. So and then, as a matter of fact, as a matter of course, when you replace the drainage with your storm sewers, and the streets are usually replacing the water sewer lines, are very often replacing the water sewer lines, so it's a very comprehensive program. But I think it's off to a good start. We're still talking concept in the overview committee right now. But it's going fine. I think we had a credible program, the first part of it being the, you know, adjudication of the liability. I do want to have a session where people can come forward and give their concerns about the way the program is being administered. As a matter of fact, I was talking to my staff today about an agenda for the August meeting, and we may do it in August and we may do it in September, where people would have an opportunity to come forward and raise problems that they have, and we would try to advertise that, you know, to the public and to the trade groups and so forth.
I think one of the criticisms that has emerged about the Rebuild Houston is that, you know, a lot of the details of what this was going to be was not on the ballot, was not a part of the ballot proposition. That some people are saying we should have worked some of these things out before people voted on it. Do you agree with that criticism?
No, I don't. Having participated in the overview committee discussions, I think it takes a while to envision what should be done and then to establish the priorities for doing it. We have a year to come up with that, and I think it would take that long. I mean, I don't think there would have been any reason to do it if we, you know, didn't have the money. Are reasonably sure that we'd have the money to do it. Usually bonds are voted for, the general projects are identified, but all the specific projects are not. You know, you have drainage and you have streets, and you're not required to specify every specific project. And if people are asking for that, I just don't think it can be done.
Okay. Did you vote for the proposition yourself?
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I guess the other...
And it passed in District G by a pretty good majority.
Okay. I guess the other criticism that people have is that, you know, there have been some issues with the way it has been rolled out. In terms, you know, first we were told $5 a month, and then that was backtracked, and there's some questions about the data that the city has gathered. Do you just see these as sort of, you know, the usual bumps along the way, or do you think that there's something more fundamental going on?
Well, I think the mayor has admitted to a mistake, and I don't think... it didn't affect me because I calculated how much I would owe. I knew how much I was going to owe. And anyone who wanted to could have calculated that. I know we put out in our newsletter how you calculate it before the election. And I had some people, you know, call in about that. It was a mistake to put that information out. I have no idea what the effect on the election was. I mean, some people paid attention to it and some people didn't.
All right. Would you say that there's any validity to the criticism that people didn't know what they were voting for on this proposition?
There's no way I can know that. I'm sure some people feel that way. I mean, everybody has they're entitled to their own opinion. I think that we need a replacement of infrastructure in this city. You know, I attended a conference last week that you may have been aware of. It was written in the paper. Former governor of Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell, was here, and there's a national group promoting the replacement of infrastructure. And the national civil engineers rate the national infrastructure as a D-. And, you know, you have to have money to replace infrastructure. And infrastructure promotes economic development. It promotes public safety. It promotes a feeling of well-being in neighborhoods. And... I like it because, you know, everybody is paying. The money, the improvements are being constructed in the most efficient way financially as they can. It's on a pay-as-you-go basis. It's not on a debt basis. You know, we're eventually going to use about the equivalent of 12 cents of taxes, 12 cent levy of taxes to pay on the current basis. And after we're well into the program, we're going to be, you know, better assured that there's money available for these things. The infrastructure has been put off on the city budget, and it's time to do something about it. Eric, the replacement of infrastructure is kind of a creeping kind of thing. You don't notice it all of a sudden. I mean, not a lot of bridges break and fall into the river. They usually, you know, gradually deteriorate, and then, you know, they have to be replaced. And the same is true for neighborhoods. Neighborhoods have, you know, good streets, and then they have decent streets, and then they have bad streets. You know, the point is that they deteriorate over time, so you have to be vigilant. And sometimes you have to replace them, you know, even though you think you can get along. But I think infrastructure, that's one of the basic things that governments do is infrastructure.
Okay.
And I think that we're properly emphasizing.
Did you agree with the decision, that the vote that council took to exempt schools and churches?
There was a very substantial public outcry for that, and yes, I did, because one of the things that I found in this office is that there is a great public need for social services. The city government has a very small budget for social services, and there's a great deal of volunteerism and plus cash spent by churches for things like after school, for health services, for services to the elderly. I know my church, they have they have computer classes for the elderly, they have Alzheimer's classes. I mean, there are all sorts of public services that our churches provide. A lot of them, of course, operate schools, you know, elementary schools and junior high schools and high schools that they're associated, you know, partially subsidized by schools. Palmer Episcopal out by Rice provides, I believe, breakfast to the homeless. Christchurch Cathedral downtown provides either lunch or dinner, and that's funded exclusively by the congregations. So there are a lot of social services that are provided. Plus, I think we get a lot of volunteerism from what the churches do that's worthwhile.
Okay.
Our churches are more than just religion. You know, there's a lot of social services involved.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the budget. Council recently passed the budget for this fiscal year that cut about $100 million out of spending, laying off about 747 jobs, people, I should say. Are you satisfied with the budget that was passed?
Well, the main concern that I had going into the budget session, two concerns actually. One, that council is sufficiently informed to be of help to the mayor and the department heads in determining what's kind of a core service, what's absolutely necessary, and what is it. And the second is to reduce the budget in a permanent way rather than on a temporary fix. A temporary fix, in my judgment, would be like furloughs. I mean, we had some voluntary furloughs last year, but there were and a few mandatory ones. But I didn't think that if the mayor proposed that everybody in the city, take one day a furlough a week or two a month or whatever it was, that was a good thing to do. I thought it would have been inefficient, because generally when you miss a day or two at a job, it takes a while to catch up. So I think by reducing the headcount down there rather than proposing furloughs was a more permanent solution. And I applaud her for doing that. You know, we have about 2,500 less employees now than when she and I took office. It's very difficult to fire people, because there's a face behind every job and there's a family behind every face. It's a very difficult thing to do. I do not feel that the council has sufficient knowledge to make an independent evaluation of what departments need to be cut where. As a matter of fact, we had two swipes at the budget this year. We had a kind of a core services hearings, and then we had the budget hearings. And whereas in the previous year, we just had the budget hearings. I know, we learned more about the services provided by the departments this year than we did last year. But frankly, I don't think we know enough, or at least I don't feel I know enough, to really make further refinements to the headcount at City Hall. What I suggested when the budget was approved back in June was that we immediately begin on next year's budget, and that we have state legislative-style hearings where we would have subcommittees. We would look at the budgets of one or two departments so that those subcommittee members could get into the nuts and bolts of what goes on. Right now, we have hearings of the Committee of Hope. Every council member is a member of the Audit and Finance Committee, and we have about 5 minutes each to ask questions about a department. I mean, you can go around and have another 5 minutes, but it's not a very efficient way to learn what the department is doing. So I would say I'm pretty happy with what we've done. Obviously, we have borrowed from the policeman's retirement plan, $17.5 million, I believe, that we have to repay with interest, which is a temporary loan, and we cannot continue that on. I mean, that just doesn't work. I'm sure the policeman wouldn't let us, and it's not something we can do. There's some one-year things that we've done, like consolidation of department and sale of certain real estate, which, you know, won't produce any money next year, but we'll have the same recurring expenses. So we're gonna have to probably cut some more people. I do not know where those are. I don't know what the appropriate cuts would be, but I think we got to look at it very closely.
Well, but certainly some of the problem is revenue, and that's tied to the economic conditions. Certainly, I'm sure everybody is hoping that property values and property tax revenues and sales tax revenues will rebound next year. You know, if that happens and the city has more money than original, than perhaps it's originally anticipated, do you still think cuts are necessary, or do you think you...
Well, if we get more revenues, that'll make it easier. I was talking with the people in the mayor's department today, in the mayor's office today, and we have 10,000 permanent units under construction. I don't know exactly how much value that will add, but it would be a substantial amount. And I know that the sales tax projections are up. Actually, the sales tax revenues have started going up this year. So there will be some additional revenues. But I think whether we have increased revenues or not, I mean, I think most of my constituents, and I don't know whether this is citywide, feel like the city has too many employees. And I think whether it's in your own personal business or in your own private business or in the city business or other public entity, you need to be ever vigilant about how many employees you have, you know, what the efficiency is. I mean, it's just something that I think we need to address, you know, every day, every week.
Okay. I mean, do you kind of have, at a philosophical level, do you kind of have in your mind what the right size is, or is that something that you think is going to evolve all the time?
I think it's going to evolve.
Okay.
We've seen that, you know, there's been a great deal of productivity increase in private industry in this country. That's one of the reasons why we have so much unemployed. I think that, as I understand it, and listen to the pundits, that companies are employing capital rather than individuals. But I don't think that's the case with government. I don't think that we can increase our productivity that much. And we may not be able to do it since it's primarily a service business.
Okay. Let's talk about red light cameras. Did you vote to keep the red light cameras or to get rid of them last year?
Well, I don't think there was a vote on that.
I'm talking about the city proposition. The proposition that was on the ballot.
I was for the red light cameras. The District G as a whole voted narrowly for the red light cameras. As a matter of fact, my wife was T-boned by a car at a red light intersection and took about a year to get over it. And so I felt like, as a matter of public safety, that the red light cameras were appropriate, particularly with the safeguards that are there. You know, you have the cameras, and the camera company would say there are these violations, and the violations were only for those who entered the intersection on red, not on yellow and turning red. And then the police department would further review the suggested violations, and I think only about 60% of the noted violators were sent tickets. So I think it's a very conservative system. However, right now, with the current situation where we've had the election, I think they'll get rid of the red light cameras.
All right, so you would support for the city to find a settlement with ATS to get out of the contract?
Yeah, I think, you know, the number that I've heard, if we had to pay them off in full, is $20 million. We can't afford to do that, and it would not be for that. There is there's a chance that an appellate court, of course, could reverse the district court, really. And of course, the federal judge has yet to rule on the measure of damages, and we just have the issue presented to him, and that is whether the election was valid and he ruled it was not. So I would be for pursuing the remedies in the federal court. There's also a short-term cancellation provision in there, 120 days. There's an argument that is not valid because that contract started in 06, and then there was no short-term cancellation allowed for the first 3 years, and then the contract was renewed in 09, and so the company is arguing that no termination provision was restarted in 09. Now, if we can invoke that for another 3 years, if we can invoke that provision, I think that would get the damages down to around $2 million. I That's what I've heard. I haven't made that calculation myself, and so I think that would be worth considering.
Did you support the mayor's decision to turn the cameras on?
I don't think we have any choice on that. I think we would accrue damages to the company if we didn't do that.
Okay. City Council recently went through the process of redrawing its council districts. Were you satisfied with the way that process went?
I actually didn't think we needed two additional seats, and I made a motion not to create them, which failed because I didn't think we'd reach 2.1 million based on the census. And there were two or three other people who agreed with me. But once it was decided to go ahead with that, I thought we had an excellent process. I think that it was very inclusive. And I'm certainly sympathetic to the portions of our population that have increased, particularly the Hispanic population. I think they had a fair shot at it, and hopefully they're happy with it. But I thought it was an excellent process. I think Jerry Wood is an excellent counselor to the city on that issue, and I think the legal department did a good job, and the mayor did a good job. And I really haven't heard. I don't think anybody's challenged it. I could be wrong about that.
I'm not aware of any litigation.
I think it was an excellent process. I mean, obviously, I lost 70,000 people, and I had about 270,000. I think about have 195 right now. I lost those people, but my neighborhood wasn't changed that much. From my standpoint, I'm fine with it. I just hope that people like those in District C, whose areas were, configured very substantially, are, happy with it.
Okay. How would you grade Mayor Parker on her first term in office?
The mayor is a very knowledgeable person, and from my standpoint as a council member, she is open to suggestions on most issues. There's some that she's pretty rigid on, which is what you would expect from a mayor. I've been happy with her performance. I felt like as a council member that I and my constituents have gotten a fair shake, and that on policy issues that she's listened to what I've had to say, like the appeals and the on the drainage fee, which was my idea, and she agreed to. And I had one or two other things like that.
Okay. Besides the ongoing work with the Flooding and Drainage Committee, what do you anticipate working on in the next 2 years?
Well, I'm interested in a lot of things. Constituent services, of course, is a big issue. And, we get, 100 calls a day in our office. And so we're constantly following up or initiating, drainage calls, water calls, traffic light calls, traffic around schools, those kind of things. We're working on those things. And, my background as a lawyer, I attended a lot of neighborhood meetings, so I'm very comfortable doing that. And I regularly attend all the super neighborhood meetings. We have, about six super neighborhoods in the district. And what happens, I alternate with one of my staff members. I go to one month, and he goes to one next month. And then we go to property owners association meetings. So anyway, we really, and my staff, Mark Kursky, produces an excellent newsletter that I get congratulatory remarks about all the time because it's newsy. It provides information that they need. So in addition to that, I'm working on economic development. I was out at the Ports Container Facility yesterday. Spent about 3 hours out there looking at that. I had a meeting this morning on real estate development with the city. There's a fellow that has a program that shows the vacant property, and we talked to the mayor's office about encouraging people to put their property on the market for sale, and enter into discussions with people about putting the property to use, putting vacant property back on the tax rolls. Another participant was one of the vice architecture professors. They want to become involved in, land use issues to give their ideas of how they can be helpful out there to get them involved in the community. So economic development is a very broad subject, so it's very difficult to find a piece that you can really gnaw on and do some good. But I'm interested, I definitely am. I'm interested in relations between the police department and certain minority communities. I'm waiting to do anything on that other than just talk to a few people to see how the mayor's two new committees, citizens' committees, are going to perform. I think, you know, there are certain parts of the community who feel like that they're being mistreated. Whether that's true or not, I don't have any judgment on, but they feel that way. And so we need to bridge that gap somehow, and I can't tell you I have any remedies other than we need broad community support for the police department. The statement that Jolanda Jones made about don't talk to the police didn't originate with her, as far as I'm concerned. I've heard black ministers or a black minister state that to at least one congregation. So, you know, I know it's true. I know they feel that way, and it's an issue that I think the community would be much better off on if we could resolve in some way.
Okay.
So my interests are pretty broad, but I try to work on things where I can develop a work product, not just sit and talk about it. But like today, we had two specific things we were going to do as a result of the meeting, and I'm trying to get to reach that point on economic development. I did, as a result of calling on companies and asking what their priorities are, one of the companies I called on was Marathon, and now I don't know whether they did it for their own reasons, but they're contributing $450,000 for the improvement of Grady Park right there at Sage and San Felipe. When they separated their two companies, one EMP from refining, they made that announcement and they announced the grant to the city. And I think we're probably going to get maybe a matching grant out of the management district there or some of the other local residents. And, you know, that's the kind of thing, if you start working on it, you know, sometimes good things happen. So it's a good feeling.
City Council is going to be working on an ordinance regulating density, directing where taller buildings can be built. Do you have any comment on that?
You know, I haven't gotten involved very much in that. I talked to some of our friends on the Planning Commission about 2 weeks ago, and they said they thought it was going pretty well, that there was a consensus building on that. But then I saw you know, people in the mayor's office today, and they said that the discussions had gotten real hot. So I have not been involved with that issue. Obviously, we need to protect our neighborhoods. I firmly believe that our neighborhoods and the people that live in them are our greatest assets in the city, maybe in addition to our industries along the channel, which I renewed my firsthand knowledge of. I'm originally from the east end of Harris County. Because when people come here, they enjoy living here. They enjoy the people, they enjoy the neighborhoods, and we need to protect that. And, you know, it's kind of a conundrum. Everyone says we need more density, but the streets are not getting any wider, and, you know, the residential areas are still in the same place. It would be nice if we could, you know, pick some areas that were good places for our, you know, our high-rise buildings. But, you know, we don't have any zoning. I guess the city can encourage it by the provision for infrastructure, and I think we ought to consider that. That's one of the things that I hope to do with Rebuild Houston is to, you know, not manage growth, but kind of encourage it in certain areas.
Okay. When people go to vote this November, why should they vote to give you a second term in office?
Well, hopefully from what I've said, I've been an effective member. I've provided, you know, primary service to my constituents, and, you know, I think the mayor has recognized my contribution by making me chairman of the Flooding and Drainage Committee, and frankly, I get encouragement all the time from people. They feel like I'm doing a good job, so I feel pretty good about it.
All right, Councilmember Oliver Pendian, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thanks for your time.